Test, test, test. Yes. This is an interview with Mrs. Ella Harris on November 3rd, 1997 at J.H. Rose High School. And Ms. Harris, you are willing to do this interview?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you. And first off, I'd like to ask, your full name is Ella?
Ella Elizabeth Tyson Harris.
Okay. And when and where were you born?
I was born on July 8th, 1945.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you were. Mm-hmm. Well, how many people were in the family?
Well, I'll say it like this. I was born, my mother, my biological mother, chose mm-hmm. to give me away.
Okay.
So I was adopted almost from my birth. I'm not exactly, maybe 2 weeks old or
mm-hmm.
something like that, my mom said. And so I was reared as an only child.
Oh, okay.
My mother and father had a child earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And she had died
mm-hmm.
and wanted to get another child.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened along. The doctor who delivered me and the midwife
mm-hmm.
Knew that my biological mother did not want to keep me. And he was a personal family doctor,
mm-hmm.
the doctor was of my parents,
mm-hmm.
and knew that they had wanted a child. So
here I am. Wow, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
What did your parents do for a living?
My father worked at the old Person Garrett Tobacco Company,
mm-hmm.
which now is the home, which formerly was Rose Gymnastics down on 10th Street.
Yes.
And is now a woodworking wood company.
Mm-hmm.
Furniture.
Yes, ma'am. I think
of company. Woodworks, I think it's
mm-hmm.
called.
And
my mother was a domestic worker. She worked in service.
Oh.
She cleaned, but primarily was a cook.
Oh, interesting.
And that's what she did.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So what was your early schooling like?
My early schooling was at Fleming Street School, which
mm-hmm.
is now the site of the Sadie Salt School
yes.
on Fleming Street
mm-hmm.
in West Greenville.
Mm-hmm.
And the Fleming Street School was grades 1 through 4,
mm-hmm.
and I was there for those 4 years. And Miss Sadie Salter was a school principal. She was also my
oh.
fourth grade teacher.
Oh, interesting. Very interesting. Where did you go to high school?
I went to high school after graduating from the fourth grade,
mm-hmm.
promoted to CMS High
okay.
School, which
mm-hmm.
was grade 5 through 12.
Okay.
And it was on West 5th Street, which
mm-hmm.
is now the site of the Thomas Foreman Park.
Yeah.
And the West Greenville Gymnasium
mm-hmm.
Is there on that site also. So I went there beginning probably by that time, I guess it was 1955,
mm-hmm.
and went there from grades 5 through 12 and graduated in 1963.
Wow. What was it like?
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It was just wonderful.
I've heard a lot of good things about
mm-hmm.
Epps and how it was a really
it
good
was a very good school.
School.
It was a wonderful school. You knew everybody. I think
mm-hmm.
if I talk about Epps, I can talk about the present because
mm-hmm.
we have the CMS, Greenville Industrial
mm-hmm.
Alumni Association, and we celebrate every year at the weekend closest to July 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody comes back home for that. But I think the thing about it was that there was the Fleming Street School.
Mm-hmm.
Then later on, there was South Greenville School,
mm-hmm.
which was built over on Howell Street. It's still there today.
Mm-hmm.
And then Epps High School. Everybody in Greenville went to Fleming Street, South Greenville, or
mm-hmm.
Epps. And Epps beginning in grades 5.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knew everybody.
Yeah.
And even now, I mean, when we come home and we're together, you just know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was a wonderful place to be. You had the teenagers were there, the older students,
mm-hmm.
and the children all together.
Mm-hmm.
Your brothers and sisters were there. You
mm-hmm.
walked. We walked to school. We didn't have buses at that time.
Mm-hmm.
From as far, students walked from as far as Deck Street, which Deck Street is around the corner from the present site of J.H. Rose High School.
Yeah.
And all the way from down on Reed Circle,
mm-hmm.
Which is down
That's
near East Carolina University,
yeah.
all the way to 5th Street.
That's
so you'd
right.
always meet everybody walking,
mm-hmm.
you just, and that was what we did. I guess it, I think people say the good old days when times were bad, but you didn't know that.
Yeah.
You really did not know that. And it was wonderful.
When did you decide to become a teacher? What inspired
Probably
you?
All of my life. I know I have a cousin, the late Viola Vines, who was the first member of our family, I believe, to go away to college. And she went to North Carolina College in Durham, which is now North Carolina Central. And she was a teacher beginning back in 1939, before I was born. And then her sister went. Her sister was Elnora Vines. And Elnora was a teacher. And I grew up to be a teacher, but at that time, I think in the black community, you were preachers or you were teachers or you were nurses. There were not a lot of other jobs available necessarily. And I just always thought about being a teacher. But I guess I had those role models before me in my immediate family.
That's interesting. Where did you go to school to become certified to teach?
North Carolina College, which is now North Carolina Central University in Durham.
Was it a two-year program?
No, it was a four-year program. And went from 1963 to 1967. I was a North Carolina. I received a North Carolina teacher scholarship loan back in 1963 for 4 years of college. It was a renewable scholarship of $350, and if you came out and you taught school, then of course your loan depreciated each year with that. So I had an opportunity to go, and the entire tuition may not have been the $600 or $700, which I was a North Carolina scholar, North Carolina College scholar also, so I had my money.
That's good.
To school totally on scholarship.
Where was your first job?
My first job was back at CMS. I came back to do my student teaching. My certification was in French. And I came back to do my student teaching under my French teacher, former French teacher. And there was an opening, and I was hired to teach French. And taught French there for 2 years. Had primarily, they were, Mrs. Davenport Forbes was the French teacher, the high school French teacher, but I taught the middle grades French. At that time, they were putting that in there, the second language for students who were in the eighth grade.
Now, I know from listening to other teachers and about that time period that your responsibilities went beyond the classroom and school functions, that you really felt a personal connection to your students. Was it that way with you?
Oh, yes. Back at my alma mater, number one, having relatives in the school, knowing my teachers, and being in the community. I think it was a large community, but a broad community. It was at that time. Students were there. We're all black students. It was a community effort. You did everything. I mean, you were a mentor, role model. You knew the students in church. You saw them in the grocery store. You saw them up and down Fifth Street. You went to funerals and you went to weddings. I mean, all of that was just a part of what you did. And it's also a part of what I do today. Even though it's a broader community for me, but because I had that early experience, my working even at Rose High School has always been, that's the way that it has always been. If there's a funeral among my students or, that I work with here in the broader community, I go to Wilkerson's. If I have a student who tells me they're working on a job anywhere in this town, I'm always trying to frequent those establishments where my students are. But it came, I think, from the community feeling that developed my earlier years, my high school years, and of course my earlier teaching years, that I try to bring that community feeling even here to Rose High School in my responsibilities here.
In 69, when there was the forced desegregation of the schools here, did you lose that sense of community feeling?
Well, I don't know that I would call it forced. I think it was with the 1954 decision with Brown versus the Board of Education of mm-hmm. Kansas and all of that,
mm-hmm.
You know, with all deliberate speed, it still took it from 54 through 69 mm-hmm. for it to come to Pitt County. But even at that time, I never felt that it was forced. There was to be a smooth transition as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to start somewhere.
Yes.
So that was a year to that the high school, the last class that graduated from Epps would be in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And beginning in the fall, the grades 10, 11, and 12 would come to Jay Coast High School.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of students wanted to know why those students couldn't come to Epps.
Yeah.
But that's the way, if you look at the tradition and the trend all over the country,
mm-hmm.
the black students went to the formerly all-white schools to school.
Yeah.
But even back in the earlier 60s, integration at Rose had taken place.
Yeah,
the late Mr. Travis Duncan, who was worked here at Rose, Mr.
Mm-hmm.
John Clark,
mm-hmm.
Darlinda Kilpatrick, these were some of Michael Garrett. These were some of the earliest students who Bobby Daniels left Rose, left CMS yes. and came to Rose.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was thought that you would integrate the schools with some of the better students academically
mm-hmm.
and all of that. Those were the kinds of decisions that were
mm-hmm.
made at that time. There were teachers, Mrs. Jean Darden, I remember it was a faculty member who came to Rose.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Mrs. Julia Davis was a faculty member that was no longer at St. Salter but came to Elmhurst.
Mm-hmm.
So the transition had come. It was a gradual transition. But I think in 69 it was thought that that would be the year to integrate grades 10 through 12
mm-hmm.
and to begin to integrate down in the lower grades. It had
mm-hmm.
already begun, so it would literally meet each other if
mm-hmm.
it would happen like that. So I don't know that it was forced, but it was. It took a while for it to happen,
mm-hmm.
and I guess you have to do it sometimes, and that
yes.
was the year to do it. There were a lot of misgivings on the part of a lot of people about it, and those earlier years at Rose, I did not come to Rose. That was the year that my daughter was born,
mm-hmm.
and so I was on maternity leave because I had to resign. I didn't
mm-hmm.
have a job. But when I came back in the winter of 1970
mm-hmm.
because the black students that came demanded courses like black studies and all of that. And I was not,
mm-hmm.
even though I was a foreign language major, it was felt that I knew the community.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they felt that I was respected in the community and that I was flexible enough to come over and try to teach black studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I read every night and taught
mm-hmm.
every day. And tried to hold a very firm and steady hand with those students who were somewhat more militant than I was
mm-hmm.
and than I am in my outlook and perspective.
Mm-hmm.
See, I had a very solid upbringing and an upbringing that was not only of my parents' very solid background,
mm-hmm.
but also my church family. I mean, there are things that the way that I am that way because of who I am and how I've been brought up. And
mm-hmm.
the structure that I received at CMS High School, I am first of all a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I feel about an issue, I believe that I can find it and I can document it and I can discuss it in a civil manner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I conducted my black studies classes. And I held the reins, and everybody knew that. And I think my students appreciated that in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
But when I first started teaching, I believe they wanted me to be militant,
mm-hmm.
type, hyper,
mm-hmm.
fist-waving type individual. I am not that kind of individual.
Yeah.
I will put together a structured scope and sequenced lesson and
mm-hmm.
daily lesson plan, unit plan, and it does have and I have a vision for whatever it is I'd like to end up with. I sort of
mm-hmm.
know it from the beginning, and I think I did that. And I think I was respected. But they told me about it now. They told me that they really thought that we were going to come in and do some gung-ho. But I told them that I needed to give them a background with which to do their discussion or to have their discussion. And I think I did. And I think by April, after February, March, by the end of April, the 1st of May, we could have some of those broader discussions that they really, really needed to have, but didn't have really a background for.
That's really interesting. Did you have any white students in those classes?
I did. Mm-hmm.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Did you find there was a difference in teaching white students versus in your family? I did not,
because of the way that I did it. Like I said, it was a very scholarly approach to learning. It was very structured. So everybody had assignments and everybody came back and did. And I held them, had it that way, so that everybody would have that broad base of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So that when we began to discuss, then we can have a discussion.
Yes.
And it's not so much your feelings, but a discussion. Now, I have feelings and they have feelings, but I wanted them to think about what they had to say, and I wanted it to be somewhat research-based and all of that. So that's the way I had that class. And it was a very popular class that year. I had three classes, about 30 students per class. I would imagine I might have had about 12 to 14 whites in those of that number there might have been. And they have remained lifelong friends of mine even to today.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you were able to bring together two before separate cultures, so to speak, and really open hearts and minds.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I plan to do. But here again, it was only because they had good knowledge. They had a good knowledge base.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You provided that for them. That's really fascinating.
And I didn't know anything now. I had to read every night.
Mm-hmm.
I had some very good friends. Dr. Herman Thomas is now down at UNC Charlotte. He was in working on his doctorate up at Springfield, Massachusetts. And he sent me just all kinds of information. And I became an authority, so to speak. I was the person to go and speak everywhere all over Pitt County about Black history. And I did the best I could. But with that in mind, I went back to East Carolina and received a master's in history, MAD in history.
Mm-hmm. There we go. I did have one other question. How was your relationship when you first moved over here to Rose? How was your relationship with your supervisors and other teachers?
Mrs. Dorothy Brannon, at that time, I believe, Mrs. Mildred Thompson, the late Mrs. Mildred Thompson, she was my mentor from high school, and she was on the history department here.
Mm-hmm.
And Mrs. Dorothy Brannon, very receptive, very good, I think. And I was told that they didn't know me. Some of them didn't. And they didn't know what I'd come with, but I think they respected me.
That's good. That's good. Now, I have a slightly difficult question, but do you think segregation worked, at least in this community? Do you think
access? I do. I think it's so good. I think Rose High has a good school leading to today. I think we've been able to pull our kids together academically. I mean, that everybody is have access to some of the same things. I think you may have heard that in desegregated schools, perhaps the books might have been secondhand. We didn't have some of the science equipment and those kinds of things. But we found out when we came to Rose that the students, the white students, they didn't have it either. There were things that were lacking in terms of supplies and all of that, maybe in all the schools. And some of our children were shortchanged, whether they were black or white. We found that out once the schools integrated. So I would say that there were things that we did not have at Old Rose, at Old Lips, but there was a community spirit that we had. But the other thing about it was that I do believe the best part about integration or desegregation has been access to all kinds of information and materials, which I think is good. I think all over town, everywhere now, people have lost the community. But I think one of the things that has happened in Pitt County schools is that even though students are bused here, there, and yonder, they're still taken as a community. For instance, no matter how, all the students from Greenville Terrace go
Mm-hmm.
Either they come from over the river, mm-hmm. and they go to a certain elementary school, middle school, mm-hmm. and high school. So there's a, there is a community there that still exists.
Mm-hmm.
I just think now that one of the departments that really I found lacking, and this is not negative at all, was that the business department at mm-hmm. Old Epps was top notch.
Mm-hmm.
And we were getting scholarships for our young people, and we were mm-hmm. sending our young people off to colleges and universities, and we were getting jobs for them with FBI and all those things when mm-hmm. we were at Epps. When we came to Rose, there was a lot to be desired in that area.
Did it improve after time?
Not fully. Okay. We've not gotten back to that. We've never, not in that area. Not mm-hmm. in that area.
Okay.
We have not. I know that man has to be there.
She knows
that she's not here.
Right.
And that's what living at the college is up to. But I just want to be known that I want to be
out of line.
That's exactly right. Since if I have to wait until tomorrow, you will, but you try not to put that on paper.
Okay,
then it's not.
Okay, I'll just call it to a person.
Okay, good.
All right. And I'm glad you told me.
Thank you.
That's good.
All right.
And I really have just one last question. What was the biggest challenge you faced as a teacher? I guess to clarify a bit, there could have been a certain time period that, you know, or a certain student that you really had a hard time helping? Or making the transition from teacher to administration, is that difficult?
I think the hardest, the most difficult transition that I've had to make is to see the way the homes are not as supportive as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen children that really do not know how to behave. They do not know. They really do not. They mm-hmm. have to be taught. How to behave, what is not acceptable behavior,
mm-hmm.
what is not an acceptable student-teacher relationship or adult-child
mm-hmm.
relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That has been interesting to me, and I have had to teach it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that that's been about 10 years ago that began to happen, that I began to feel that it had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So that perhaps has been the most difficult. Desegregation, all of that wasn't all that difficult. I mean, mm-hmm. to me, we had police on the hall.
Mm-hmm.
We had, I kept on teaching.
Yeah.
See, I locked my door.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could always get out of the door, but
yeah.
from the outside, nobody could get in.
Mm-hmm.
And I taught school. No matter how difficult it was, I kept my students focused on that subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
Because I believe in education, and I believe that education was the key that would unlock all kinds of doors.
Mm-hmm.
When I had an opportunity to get my master's and to go back then and to get a certification in supervision and administration,
mm-hmm.
that was just another academic opportunity for me,
mm-hmm.
hoping that I would have an opportunity to get a position. But again, it was an educational opportunity because I'm somewhat scholarly a little bit, so
yeah.
I like to think that I like to study and
mm-hmm.
learn. So
mm-hmm.
that was an opportunity that way. And I have been very pleased to have been able to work in an administrative position. But I think one of the most difficult things that we have faced is the lack of home training that the students really have not received.
Mm-hmm.
And that the students really do not know how to behave.
Yeah.
But it's only because the parents, I know time is a factor. You know, you have to take time for children. You have
yes.
to rear them. My mama calls it the fireside chat.
Mm-hmm.
All of that. And I just think there's a lot of that that's not going on. Everybody's working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the home, there have been way back people would always have a single parent home,
mm-hmm.
and it was a really, there's just so many factions out there in the community that are,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm just feeling that there's a lot lacking, and that we as a school, we really have to get in there and teach some of those basic character education issues and all before we can actually teach school. But I think that's needed, and I think, but we need to know that, because I think there are a lot of students that if we don't take on that responsibility now, knowing what's lacking from out there, we're going to miss a lot of kids.
Do you miss the close relationship between the teachers and parents? I know that nowadays that oftentimes, you know, parents may never meet a child's teacher.
That's true. Well, I do. I miss that. But at Rose High School, we have so many groups of parents who come over with different kinds of clubs and organizations, and we try to keep our students involved. And you do get to meet a lot of parents that way, and I'm still out there meeting them at various functions on the mall. Sometimes I think we have to take the school out there to them. I think that's a part of our responsibility too, inviting them in, especially if there's a problem with the child. And we invite them in before there is a problem, but if there is a problem, sometimes we send students home overnight just to bring a couple of parents back so we can connect this child to some grown folks, some adults. I think that's important. And sometimes you don't always have to, when a child misbehaves or whatever, you don't always have to give them 3 or 4 days at home. You can give them overnight, come in with your mom and dad tomorrow morning, type an assignment. And if they do, you work it out and you smooth it out and you keep on going. So I've found a way to do some of that. That's the kind of disciplinarian I am. I can be stern. I can be very somewhat abrupt out there on the halls.
I remember.
But I'm not like that. When I get a one-on-one, and they sit in my office, we talk, and I make friends. And I'm not afraid to atone. For instance, if I'm real rough out there on the hall, I get them in my office. And sometimes even on the hall, I'll go up to them and apologize in front of other students, because I don't mind doing that. But at that very moment, when I have to be in charge, I will be. And I've tried every little angle not to be ugly right at that moment. But if I have to be, then I will be. But that's a part of the way that I was brought up. You ask a child something, ask me something one time, my mama did it. She expected that I would do it. She didn't expect to have to ask me 2 or 3 times, and I don't either.
That's right.
Even in 1997, that's what it is. And with 30 years, I think back over it. It's been a wonderful 30 years for me. And I don't even feel like it's been 30 years. I've never been tired of this job. And people talk about retiring, but I don't know if anything else that I would do, because I do like it. I really do. I genuinely do.
Well, it has been wonderful interviewing you, and I really appreciate it.